Welcome to the Healthcare Weekly Podcast, where you can learn about the innovative ideas and technologies reshaping the healthcare industry. Join over 150,000 monthly readers and listeners all over the world. Each week, we sit down with some of the most brilliant minds in healthcare to learn what the future holds. The Healthcare Weekly Podcast, healthcare innovation starts here.
Welcome to the Healthcare Weekly Podcast. I'm Kudrinar Singh, CEO at Digital Authority Partners and Healthcare Weekly. Digital Authority Partners helps healthcare payers and providers get ready for and embrace digital transformation in the 21st century by leveraging artificial intelligence, blockchain technologies, and augmented reality to improve patient outcomes and reduce readmission rates. Today, I have the pleasure of talking to Larry Levine, President and CEO at Blaindale Children's Hospital from New York. And we'll talk to Mr. Levine about the new assistive technology center that provides comprehensive care to medically complex, fragile children by helping them communicate, interact, and become more mobile. We are also joined today by Julie Nitter, who is the Director of Occupational Therapy Assistive Technology at Blaindale Children's Hospital. Larry, Julie, welcome to the Healthcare Weekly Podcast.
Thank you. Nice to be with you.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for joining us today. So, Larry, can we talk a little bit about the focus of your hospital, how it's different from other hospitals in the New York area, and what your primary specialty is?
Sure. So Blaindale Children's Hospital is a specialty children's hospital. We're actually one of 15 in the entire United States and the only one in the state of New York that provides rehabilitative care to children that have a variety of complex medical and physical conditions. So we don't do surgery here. We don't have an emergency room. Our focus is entirely on rehabilitating the child from infancy all the way up to age 19 and ultimately discharging them home. As a matter of fact, about 91% of our patients are discharged home despite some enormous medical and physical challenges that they have, and we're very proud of that statistic. And one of the things that's important about Blaindale is that we've got about 85 full-time physical occupational speech therapists here. So we have an amazing amount of firepower that couples with our rehabilitation doctors and our pediatricians and our child neurologists to work really in concert to get these kids literally up on their feet, thinking, talking, walking, and getting them reunited back in their community with their parents, their siblings, their school, their familiar surroundings. So that's just a little bit about Blaindale.
And can we talk a little bit more about the Center for Assistive Technology? What does it do? What are some of the technologies being leveraged? And ultimately, what are the patient outcomes you are trying to positively impact by leveraging these assistive technologies?
Sure. So the Center for Assistive Technology has been around for quite some time. On average, Blaindale treats about 1,000 children in either our inpatient day hospital or outpatient programs that are on some form of AT. And these really span a variety of different diagnoses. Julie can certainly talk a little bit more about it, but all of our therapists are really engaged with the patients to make sure that they can get the best out of themselves to, again, write a paper where they don't have manual dexterity, that they can speak, but maybe their speech may be slurred because of cerebral palsy. They may have low vision, and we have a variety of devices that power their vision so they can see more properly. So it's an amazing group of people that really focus on these important aspects of the quality of life of a child. And most of our referrals come from the acute children's hospitals. So once their medical care is over and they're stabilized, they are then transferred to Blaindale for continuing medical care and also the rehabilitation, and then they go home. So assistive technology plays a very, very important part of their entire medical regimen.
Can we talk specifically about, let's say, one or two examples of assistive technologies that your hospital is leveraging?
Sure. One example is we now have a variety of ways for a child who has no visible movement to interact with an augmentative or alternative speech device or a computer. We have systems that will pick up only eye movement, and with the movement of their eyes, a child could send an email, select preferred games and apps, or engage in a phone call, really anything their peers are doing. Or we have sensors that are EMG switches that will pick up just a trace movement of a muscle and generate enough force to interact with a computer as well, or a power chair or other technologies. So children who appear to have absolutely no movement can now speak, move through space, and stay in touch with their family and friends.
So have these technologies, any of them been developed by Blendale, or are all developed by, let's say, third-party pharma or device manufacturing organizations?
That's an excellent question. They're always developed over time. At this point, most of the technology we're using has been developed by manufacturers. We are one of the places who provides a lot of technology to children, so we are fortunate to get demos and beta tests and give feedback to the manufacturers, but we are not currently developing them on site.
Got it. So how long has it been since your team has been adopting these assistive technologies? Is this something like recent? Has it been happening gradually over time?
We've been using assistive technology literally for 100 years. It's just evolved dramatically over time. And certainly now, with the expansion of technology in every phase of our life, it has really expanded exponentially for our children, and the variety of options and the fluidity of options, frequency of change, is really coming to a wonderful peak right now.
Because you've been leveraging these technologies for a while now, have you guys done any studies to see if the adoption of assistive technologies has made a substantial difference in patient outcome?
We're in the process of a study right now where we're tracking outcomes for our children in areas that include seating and mobility, as a child uses a power chair for the first time, how long are they able to use that same power chair, how often is the special technology being used in their home school district versus in the home versus here. And we're really at the early stages of that study, so we don't have the real final outcomes and results yet, but we're finding huge variation depending on the family's educational level, the amount of support at home, and the amount of training we've been able to provide to the family and the school staff. The training needs for those people who are going to work with the child is absolutely essential.
Thank you. Thank you very much for that answer. So, Larry, many healthcare providers and definitely majority of hospitals in the United States are often concerned with adopting new and various technologies. There's a lot of fears when it comes down to, of course, HIPAA-related concerns, cybersecurity attacks, personal data, also malfunctioning of these devices. So I find it fascinating and very encouraging to see that Blendale is leading the path in leveraging technologies in a hospital setting. But when you guys started adopting these technologies, have you seen any pushback from physicians, from your IT group, from within the company, and how have you addressed those?
Well, I think the hospital here has been very supportive in terms of assistive technology services that we provide. We have a dedicated core of IT, information technology, people that support the software, and obviously the billing office makes sure that the bills go out. I think the challenge for us really is on the other side to make sure that insurance companies recognize the importance of these devices for children so that they can get the proper seating device. It's obviously, you know, this is not bone marrow transplantation or life-saving things, but the work that Blythedale and many of the specialty children's hospitals do improve the quality of life enormously for these children. And so we've really tried to educate third-party payers, including Medicaid agencies, to recognize the importance that assistive technology plays, not only in the hospital, but most importantly, when a child goes home, right? So the average length of stay here is between 5 and 7 weeks. When the child goes home to their community or their school district, we need to make sure that the technology that they have learned and become proficient on is carried through not only in school, but also in their home. And it's been somewhat challenging to get insurance companies to understand this, to understand this is not educational and it's not sort of strawberry on the cake, so to speak. But in fact, it's really as required as any medicine or antibiotic that a child would take. This is literally their lifeline between themselves being trapped in their body and being able to become happy, healthy, productive young children that can play and interact with their schoolmates and their parents and their grandparents. And if we have third-party payers, insurance companies, and Medicaid agencies and leaders listening, I encourage you to look at our website. We've got a lot of information on assistive technology, and certainly to call or write to Julie Nitter and myself at blythefieldchildrenshospital.org. And we would be glad to talk to people about the importance of AT. But making sure that insurance pays for this once the child leaves the hospital is so incredibly important. Otherwise, imagine what we're doing. We're putting kids on devices, and they're making enormous progress while they're here, and then we don't want them to be left with nothing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I think you're bringing up a very interesting point. Actually, recently, Healthcare Weekly released a report on the state of artificial intelligence in the United States in healthcare. And one of the things that's very interesting as part of that report was the fact that the FDA has actually approved more than 20 artificial intelligence algorithms for use, let's call it medicine, in the United States. So, you know, the FDA, in a way, is recognizing that technology can play a huge role in the delivery of care. But at the same time, you are struggling as an institution to have the other part of the government, like Medicare, recognizing the technologies and, of course, paying for care accordingly. And it just shows that there is ultimately a disconnect when it comes down to adopting these technologies, because the technology can do good for a child when, to your point, while they're in a hospital, but someone needs to recognize these technologies officially in order to continue the delivery of care over time. So that's a very, very interesting point. Have you had any success when talking to third-party insurance?
We're trying to. I think the important point I want to make here is that much has been written in the literature, and I think insurance companies do recognize for the adult population, people that are physically challenged, that get out of the house and get a job, and it's obviously the ADA and all that has really helped, that adults become productive citizens. They become taxpayers, they're productive at work, all very, very important. And that's good public policy, right? It's good for the patient, it's good for the person, it gives them dignity, and they're able to go out into the workforce and to become a productive member of society. Unfortunately, we don't see, for certainly younger children, that same kind of tenacity and focus that we as child advocates really believe that children deserve, so that even if they're in pre-K or even if they're in infancy, there are a variety of amazing technologies that Julie has talked about that offer these young children the ability to do all sorts of things, communicate the most simple feelings of, I want a hug, I want to be loved, I love the color blue, whatever it is, very simple thoughts. But before they were trapped and locked into their bodies, and now they're able to express intellectually and also their feelings in such a way that will never mirror what a taxpayer can do working at a job and a company. But it's so important to that grandparent or that sibling or to that mother or father that they're able to say the most simple things and be a productive member of their family. And so that has to be rewarded as well.
Well said.
Okay. I know, Larry, you have to go to another appointment. So I have just one more question for you. We will continue the podcast talking to Julie in more details about what Lindale is currently doing. But Larry, what role do you think technology will play in the hospital setting, let's say over the next one or two decades? As technology evolves, what do you think the future holds for your hospital and the healthcare industry as a whole as the industry continues to recognize, adopt, and hopefully pay for more and more assistive technologies?
Sure. I think our future is bright. Our occupancy is close to 100%. we receive referrals primarily from other acute care children's hospitals and acute care pediatric programs throughout the tri-state area, which is New York State, Connecticut, and New Jersey. And we do get children from out of state, particularly in Pennsylvania and the Boston area, and do have some international patients as well. And so what we have seen is that as medicine continues to focus on taking care of kids in the hospital that are much, much more sick and acute, our capabilities both medically and in nursing have ramped up certainly over the last 20 years. Mm-hmm. But also the growth in PTOT and speech has also paralleled that. And what we're finding is that more and more kids need our services because there are very few places, there are very few centers of excellence that deal with what we do. Thank God, most children don't get sick, and most kids that get sick don't need a Blythedale Children's Hospital. So that's why we're a regional center of excellence and have built up the expertise that gets kids from Children's Hospital of Philadelphia all the way up to Boston Children's and all the wonderful medical facilities within New York as well as Connecticut, Yale Children's being another. So we're able to treat more and more of these kids because of the specialty focus that we have. So we're excited about our future. We've just built, in the last 5 years, a brand new children's hospital here. Last year, we opened a new banking space for our Center of Assistive Technology. And Blythedale continues to grow and expand. And we look forward to serving many, many kids and as a beacon of hope for these kids for years to come.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for joining our podcast. I really appreciate your insights.
Thank you. It was a pleasure being with you. And I leave you now in the able hands of Julie Netter.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So, Julie, I want to kind of delve into more details in regards to, let's say, one or two use cases when it comes down to these technologies. Earlier, Larry mentioned, and I think you did as well, different technologies when it comes down to, you know, speech devices, eye movements, engage in phone calls. And, you know, as we're talking about delivery of care, Larry's talking about, you know, most children hopefully are healthy. It occurred to me that ultimately a lot of these technologies, the assistive technologies you're leveraging, they're for, you know, use cases that are, you know, they're not happening, let's say, every day, right? So because they're out of sight, out of mind, the world doesn't talk about them, right? They're not real until, you know, of course, it impacts your own children. So I definitely find this topic fascinating. So can we talk about one or two most common types of technologies you're currently leveraging at your hospital and how they work?
Sure. And some of the more common technology we use are in the area of seating and mobility and power mobility for those children who are not able to walk or propel a wheelchair using their arms. We have a variety of ways that they can control a power wheelchair using different headset switches. And for example, even a very young child of, say, 3 or 4 could learn to drive a power wheelchair by subtle changes in their head position. We use proximity switches, so a switch built into the headrest of a wheelchair. It picks up the location of a child's head relative to the headrest, and by just moving their head, they can control how fast and what direction a power chair can move. And that is tremendously empowering for any child. But for a family to see their young child move independently for the first time is incredibly rewarding and overwhelming. And you can see children, you know, going down the hallway with their siblings for the first time. And it really opens up a whole new world for the children, both developmentally and educationally, and they can have the first sense of autonomy from their parents, even within, you know, a hospital setting. So that's frequent use of technology here for our children. And it may be a lifelong need or it may be a temporary need as the child recovers from their illness. It varies dramatically.
So in the current environment, just to kind of visualize this, a child is diagnosed with a condition that requires further care or even, you know, as you called it, lifelong care, and they come to your hospital, they receive the care they need, then they're discharged, right? But I heard a concern with regards to insurance companies paying for the care that is required once children leave the hospital, right? So is in the current environment, is it the case that, you know, once children leave your hospital, they may not get the same assistive technologies and help they get within the hospital?
That is sometimes true, yes. For example, if that three-year-old child is able to drive a power chair independently, we have sometimes heard from insurance companies that a three-year-old doesn't need to move independently. Perhaps their parent or caregiver could push them in a stroller instead, which we all know from a developmental perspective is less than ideal, and it does delay their independent functioning as well as their development. We are generally successful when we educate and re-justify and continue to work for each child with their insurance company. However, it delays the process and it can make it extremely labor intensive and very slow for a child to get the technology they need. We also sometimes have to seek alternate funding or fundraisers. It is a labor intensive and frustrating process for many of our families.
So what is the impact? And I think a lot of our, you know, listeners would like to know, you know, if insurance companies do not want to pay for this, then what happens, right? Like you mentioned the fact that there could be a delay in developmental functions and developing those functions over time. Does the reluctance of insurance companies covering the assistive technologies also result in higher readmission rates?
I don't know. I don't really have that information. Readmission for us would be more based on a medical need. If the technology like a ventilator failing, a child needs more medical support from a feeding point of view or a medication management point of view. We do see children back on an outpatient basis to help support their technology and their functional independence needs. So we hope to see children on a regular basis as outpatients, whether the technology is succeeding or failing. If it's going very well, chances are the technology needs to be upgraded and revised as a child's abilities change, their learning needs change, their skill set changes, the technology should evolve with them.
Of all technologies currently deployed at your hospital, can you tell me which one is, let's call it, like most surprising, like the one that when you saw it, you're like, wow, you know, I'm really excited about what assistive technologies can do for patients or, you know, for children?
The one that's most exciting is the one that excites the child and leads to a new skill that they've never shown before. It can be a very simple, layperson-friendly, common use technology, like a basic tablet that's used in a different way, or a child can access with a switch and can now, you know, make a video call to a relative. Can be the most exciting technology if that opens up the child's world. It really depends on the child.
Is there any technology that you've seen in hospital setting that you thought is like, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen so far?
Some of the things that I personally find exciting are those things that are still in the research phase. I mean, we really strive to incorporate research, basic science, and look towards how to apply those into clinical practice. So the next exciting things are not yet available for use in clinical settings and certainly not yet with children, but a lot of the technologies that, the brain-computer interfaces, some of the brain mapping, some of those direct current stimulation devices are all really in a research phase. And hopefully the learning that comes from use of the new technologies will develop new access for some of our children.
Thank you very much for that answer. So I like to end the podcast by talking about the future. And it's not just not kind of an abstract future, but the future of delivery of care in the healthcare space, given the fact that there's technologies that are being leveraged. As we all know, the 20% of the GDP in the United States is spent on healthcare, which is huge, right? It's significantly higher than the defense budget for this country. And as a result of that, of course, everyone in the United States is concerned with the rising cost of healthcare. But now what we're seeing is that adopting various technologies can lead to a more manageable cost, but most importantly, to better outcomes. So now, when talking and thinking about the future, there are kind of different schools of thought, right? There's those who believe that technology would evolve to such an extent that it would actually replace doctors. And there's a lot of folks talking about this, how, you know, one technology at a time is just a piece of the puzzle. And, you know, 10, 20, 30 years down the line, we will see a replacement in doctors with technology. There's others who take, let's say, a more measured approach and argue that as technology evolves, it will become kind of a doctor's best friend, and it will simply be an input into providing better quality of care. So my question to you is, like, you know, how do you see the future, especially as you're right there in the middle of the action, so to speak, where you see these technologies being deployed, leveraged, and you see the positive impact they can have on children?
Well, I hope the future allows us to provide the care that a client needs regardless of the setting. Right now, the care we provide on-site that's face-to-face with the child is reimbursable. Anything that we provide for the child or the family on the phone, on a video call, or email support, any other type of interaction is not reimbursable, and that can be frustrating for the clinician and then time-consuming for the family, because now they need to bring in their child for a face-to-face in the hospital to have the child's needs met. So I hope we have a more flexible system in the future, providing the best possible care for our children in the way that is most efficient for the family and for the provider. We will absolutely still need face-to-face time, and there's no substitute for direct treatment and direct care, but there are things that can be provided remotely.
Thank you so much. I'm Coach Narsin, CEO of Digital Authority Partners in Healthcare Weekly. Today, we had the pleasure of talking to Larry Levine, President and CEO at Glendale Children's Hospitals. We're also joined today by Julie Nitter, the Director of Occupational Therapy Assistive Technology at Glendale. Julie, thank you so much for joining the podcast.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Healthcare Weekly podcast. Don't forget to visit us at healthcareweekly.com. Subscribe to our channel on your favorite podcast app to get a notification every time a new episode is released. Do you know of an inspirational health leader who should be on our podcast? Email us at hello@healthcareweekly.com with details. Healthcare Weekly Podcast. Healthcare innovation starts here.